Thank you, Professor Shapiro. Who is an American? Perhaps one can answer that question best if one thinks of the first settlers ever to come to these shores and then asks, what was there about them that we still think characteristic of ourselves? Well, those settlers were immigrants, first of all. They had three main objectives they hoped to attain. They wanted to make a living, of course. Wanted to engage in some activity which would keep them and their families safe from poverty, and wanted to do that honestly and freely. Again, they desired liberty of conscience and of political institutions. Aware as they unfortunately were of the meaning of tyranny in Europe, they looked in their thinking toward those policies and principles which were expressed near the close of the 18th century in the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. Finally, they were great believers in education, and from the beginning worked to build up a school system which would make available to everybody the culture and the skills men need to acquire. That education had for them always a religious implication and significance. It seemed to them obvious that men will act in ways consonant with the purpose of democracy only when they believe in moral principle. I have said that those settlers were immigrants. All of us, regardless of who we may be, are either immigrants or sons and daughters, grandsons and granddaughters, great-grandsons and great-granddaughters of immigrants. Each of us belongs either directly or by heritage to some group which left Europe for reasons akin to those which governed the conduct of the earliest settlers. America is therefore something we have all built together. Think of the contribution which the Irish immigrants of the 40s made to the development of the textile industries, or of what the incoming Jewish artisans of the 90s have done to create the great garment trade, or of the work praised so warmly already by Thomas Jefferson in his day, done by German settlers to develop American agriculture to a degree of excellence hitherto unknown. We could speak of the contribution of the French in the valley of the Kankakee and elsewhere, of a vast and laborious Italian population, of what the Negro has done, in spite of limited opportunities, to humanize and civilize the households of several generations. I could refer to the frugal and healthy Slovak immigration, to the achievements of the Dutch and the Belgian. If we are today a great industrial and agricultural people, stronger by reason of our resources than any other nation, it is not the result of natural wealth only, but also of the hard work and intelligent foresight of all those who brought to the new world the human legacy of the old. Let me say a word in particular about the Chinese. They have been handicapped by a number of restrictions, some of them very onerous indeed. Too frequently we forgot that they were humble representatives of a great civilization which more than a century ago charmed the best minds of Europe. We thought of them as slaves in laundries and as concoctors of chop suey. Nevertheless, these Chinese have made a very large contribution to our economic welfare, and today their American sons and daughters are attending colleges and universities preparing for a better future. But economic activity is not the only thing in which the newcomer has been interested. Each time the tide of immigration rose, it brought to these shores new and invigorating cultural forces. The Germans who came in 1848 brought with them devotion to democratic principle. They loved freedom even as they loved good government. It is to them that we owe, in considerable measure, the successful prosecution of the Civil War and the emancipation of the Negro. The Irish kept alive in their hearts a deep concern for religious values. Out of the migration of Jews from Russia prior to the war of 1914, the Zionist movement, with all its multiform spiritual implications, was born. The Italians, often looked down upon by earlier arrivals, kept alive their music, love of music and of art. They have softened the rough edges of life in dozens of cities by reason of a culture never forgotten and forever cherished. I wonder if we always appreciate what the several immigrant peoples of Central Europe, the Slovaks, the Croats, the Czechs, the Poles, have done in music, painting, and literature. Today, a new migration, enforced by the most ruthless tyrant Europe has ever known, is once more enriching American life. Do we appreciate the magnificent contributions which refugee scientists are making to our national defense, or the assistance which refugee economists are rendering in so many ways, or the riches of cultural inspiration which so many of Europe's best minds are now offering in so large a number of cities and towns? Let us remember that these refugees are just like our own ancestors. They are exiles from tyranny. While they are not yet familiar with American ways and customs, they are eager to learn. All too fresh in their memories are those things of which Walt Whitman wrote in the Song of the Broad Axe, the bursting in of mercenaries and bigots tumultuously and disorderly. Roar, flame, blood, drunkenness, madness. Goods freely rifled from houses and temples, screams of women in the gripe of brigands, craft and thievery of camp followers, men running, old persons despairing. But they are also eager to go where the city of faithfulest friends stands, where the city of the cleanliness of the sexes stands, where the city of the healthiest fathers stands, where the city of the best-bodied mothers stand. Oh, yes, none of us immigrants has had an easy time of it. The Negro came in the hold of a slave ship. The Irish toiled endlessly in the mills. Italians have been pushed off the streets, made the butt of jokes. Vile insults have been hurled into the faces of the Jews. We have heard one of the oldest and proudest of peoples referred to as Hunyaks. You and I have repeated over and over again, without thinking, silly nonsense about the English, preferring an old world prejudice to a new world possibility of friendship. But nevertheless, we have made progress. We are still committed to respect for one another. We are sometimes foolish, but not often furious. I think we might well afford to forget what we have suffered silently for the sake of the country we have built together. But surely we must forget for the sake of what will someday be a just world when the war in which we are now fighting side by side has been won. I cannot speak as more than a private citizen, but it seems to me that our government is deeply aware of the fact that we are a nation made up of many peoples and many generations. Nowhere at any time in history have officials been more careful to protect the rights of citizens and non-citizens. Even those among us who have not yet attained to full membership in the nation are treated fairly. Anyone suspected of friendliness to a hostile power is granted a careful and impartial trial. More than that, our government seeks to make it possible for those who are still aliens to serve the common cause to the best of their abilities. Not everything has been straightened out, but the progress made is so striking that it gives every lover of democracy renewed courage and hope. That is a good thing. Let nobody tell you that this is a country which looks down upon you because you have such and such a racial or national heritage. Those who say that, those who do speak insults and misstatements, represent not your country, but its ruthless and barbarous foes. Your country is more than a machine, more than a newspaper column, more than some vile, seditious sheet published in one of our cities. Your country is Jefferson, is Lincoln, is the man in the mill, the teacher in the schoolroom, the soldier in the field. It is the Negro who dies gladly that his country may live. It is the Jewish boy whose hand is at the trigger in a scouting plane. It is the lad of Spanish descent who steps off a transport in Ireland or Australia. Your country is the handshake that makes an Italian and a Pole brothers in the stand against tyrants. Who tells you that this is not so is an agent of Hitler. I serve a college which is part and parcel of the common life of New York City, of its family picnics and rows, of its laboriousness and frugality, of its laughter and sadness, of its worries and aspirations. You can hear the metropolis tick there all day long. And if you climb to the upper floors and stand perhaps at the windows of the chemistry laboratories, you can see the city spread about you with the towers, bridges, quays, stores, highways, which are the wonder of the world. You see also countless wash lines waving to and fro on roofs and in backyards. You can smell, if the day is right, the odor of cooking coming up a million chimneys into the sun. But there is something more wonderful than that. One goes about among the students, greeting here a Greek, there a Finn, there a Chinese girl, there an Irish smile, there the kind of face which must have been that of Mary in Galilee. And you are sure that anybody who suggests that one of these young people must be set against another by reason of birth or blood, who holds that this group must be hounded into ghettos and that locked in chains of economic bondage, is an apostle who would have stirred the wrath of all our illustrious ancestors as being the spreader of mortally dangerous disease. I do not have to think these days of what Hitler has done to Europe, to his own people, in order to sense the righteousness of the cause to which we have now been committed. I have only to think of what he could do to these young people among whom I go, if he were not opposed. And so, for our sake and theirs, may God grant us the victory.
Thank you, Dr. Schuster. You've just heard Dr. George N. Schuster, president of Hunter College, who spoke to you on the subject, Americans all, immigrants all.